Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of A Gem of a Secret podcast. My name is Coco Gem Holiday, and today I'm wearing a black and gray hoodie with some cute short jeans just because it's a little cold outside and I wanted to look real sexy, and I'm still in my ponytail phase. On tonight's episode, I wanted to talk about something I had posted online because I think it's a good topic of conversation. I said, the amount of abuse drag artists take from venues that profit off of all of our skills without fair compensation or even recognition is getting a little ridiculous. As Adam always says, oh, I thought we were both just manifesting together that this event would be successful, since you know you failed to uphold your end of the agreement. Drag is sometimes cheaper than a monthly jukebox subscription, and we promote venues like nationally known influencers. What I also see happening is that when a venue realizes that drag can make the money, they become too drag-focused, then wonder why the money stopped flowing. Don't oversaturate your spaces unless that's your business model, like, you know, you're a show bar or something like that. Over the last 2 weeks, I've had amazing and terrible venue experiences. In the last year, I've had a buttload of venue losses and gains. The one key factor in venues I do not like to work with is how they treat the drag artists. And at this point, if a venue talks about how you are not bringing in enough money, what are they doing to be a part of that partnership? My advice, make sure you work out buffer months with your venue. Not every show will be amazing. Every single show is a risk. Make sure your bar does not fire you the second something goes awry. Protect yourself with contracts and verbal agreements. Never let a venue fully blame you for the lack of success. If we all want to make money, then shouldn't we all be involved? From the staff participating, from the venue promoting, decorating, and even some poster hanging, it's a partnership. And because we started a brand new show at The Knockback. It's on the first and third Wednesday of the month. The Knockback is on Alberta. It's a free bingo show. And I remember we were there or eating food next to one of the bar managers, and they said, so we also have these two TVs here. Like, we also have some music. Like, if you want to do performances or like da-da-da-da-da, this is your show. It's whatever you want to do. Like, you know, you have free reign. And they worked with us on drinks and like all this stuff. And it just was such a stark contrast from some of the stuff that I had been seeing recently. And now I'm not going to bash other venues on this podcast, but what I'm saying is it's really great when you feel valued by the bar, because then it makes you more energized to work for the bar. If the bar isn't providing you that safety net, it makes you feel dejected. And as I said earlier on earlier episodes, I did have bad bar experiences that made me feel like I didn't want to participate in those scenes anymore. So keep in mind, always, always, always support the bars that support you, support the venues that support you, support the promoters that support you and your creative ideas and your dreams. Because the reality is, we all at the end of the day, we're like, we're creating this partnership to showcase our art and to make money and to showcase a venue. So if that's not happening, if that's not a symbiotic relationship, it is time to move on. There are plenty of venues who would love to see your art. So pour yourself into those spaces that make you feel whole inside. Yeah. And so with that, how are you doing, listeners? Let me know in the comments. Tune in, fabulous listeners. We've got a sizzling announcement for all you drag aficionados and karaoke connoisseurs. Join us every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. for an unforgettable night of glamour and entertainment at Misfits Bar and Lounge, located at 2530 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. Hosted by the mesmerizing Autumn Rains and captivating Coco Gem Holiday, this drag queen karaoke show will have you singing, dancing, and living your best life. Let loose and showcase your vocal prowess alongside these extraordinary queens as they create an atmosphere bursting with energy, laughter, and pure fabulousness. Mark your calendars and gather your squad for a Wednesday night that promises to be nothing short of spectacular. Whether you're a seasoned performer or a first-time diva, Misfits Bar and Lounge is a place to be for an unforgettable evening of entertainment, empowerment, and endless fun. Don't miss out on the fabulous extravaganza. Join us this Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. and let your inner star shine at Misfits Bar and Lounge, Portland's newest queer plus space.
It's a podcast.
Check it out.
Tune into what they tell you podcast.
Check it out.
And we are back, listeners. And it is my great pleasure to introduce to the stage Ada Vox. Say hi, Ada.
Hi, Ada.
Oh, my goodness. So let's kick us off with the same question I ask everybody. So where did your drag name come from and how long have you been performing?
Yeah, my drag name, Ada Vox, A-D-A, is literally just Adam, which is my boy name without an M. And it's easy. The thing about creating the drag persona for me was that it was just an extension of the person who I already was. I'm doing what I already did, just dressed differently. So keep it simple, keep it connected. And then Vox. Cute. Yeah. And Vox just means a voice in Latin. So as you know, a singer, that's what I've been my whole life. It just made sense. It was an easy transition. Ada Vox is just Adam voice.
You know, this is the best explanation of a name I've ever heard. Seriously, best explanation. Woo! Goodness. Now I'm lost my train of thought. So let's talk about this episode, the day that we're recording that is actually the day it's releasing. So you are coming out to Portland this Sunday. Have you ever been here before?
You know, I've been a whole lot of damn places. If I have been to Portland, I apologize. I don't remember. So to the best of my knowledge, this is my first time to Portland. So hello, Portland, for the first time.
Hello, Portland. Yes. And it's funny because like when I was like thinking about this show and coming up with the concept of what I wanted to do, and I was like, oh, I have to get Ada for this show because I wanted a moment. So the show is called The Moment, and I'll tell you the history about this. So we stole something from Ball Culture and then removed it because I was like, that seems problematic. The show was originally called Category Is, and I was like, well, we're not really doing anything ballroom related, but I wanted a show that was focused on themes, like a themed show, but something that was really specific, like a moment in time, right? And something that wasn't done at other shows. And so we had Justice for Art Pop, right? You know, we had the Beyonce versus Lady Gaga show. We did a Broadway review show. We had The Nightmare Before Halloween, where we brought out Land Insider. Like, we've done a lot of things with this show, and it's always a moment, right? And the moment changes for what, like, we're going through, and then sometimes we'll talk about current issues or things that are happening in our community. And so when this show came up, I was like, because obviously we could have said, see my name in lights, like Broadway review or a musical or something like that. And I was like, no, I was like, I want it to be something impactful. Like, I want it to be like we're seeing our name in lights. So I was like, oh, that's the name of the show. So The Moment, see my name in lights, because we all want that moment, right? That moment where we see our name in lights when we're walking up to the theater and it says starring this person, and we get to have that moment and everybody gets to feel like they're on the red carpet and like feel like celebrities all night long. And I think that was a beautiful way to have the moment. And so that's when I started thinking about this. I was like, oh, I need Ada. Ada's for this. This is where Ada's coming. I know this is where Ada Vox is going to fit in perfectly in Portland.
Oh, well, thank you. No, I'm very excited to be there. And the way that you described it about like cherishing and being within that moment in time that means something. And it's like that I've made it. I'm here moment. It's a beautiful thing. And I'm really, really excited to be part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to know. So let's talk about you. So you have been on a couple of different shows. And what made you want to go, like, let's back up all the way. What made you want to go that route? Is it because, like, I know, like, around the time, like, that was kind of the only way to really make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, aggressive hard work, non-competition shows, or doing competition shows. What made you decide to go that route?
Well, unfortunately, I've been a singer my whole life. And unfortunately, without money and connections, you know, there's not much you can do aside from try to wiggle your way into being seen. And I'm not from a wealthy family. I'm not privileged, and I wasn't born into connections or anything of that nature. So my hard work started with singing in the church choir and then getting hired to sing at some people's quinceañeras and weddings and things of that nature. And, you know, but that can only take you so far when you're living in a lower class to middle class community, nobody there has the connections to make you a bright future to, you know, do whatever. We're all just making it by. So I knew growing up that I needed to do something to make my dream come true. But what really set off that dream in the first place. I had brain surgery when I was 8 years old. Oh, wow. And I was in the hospital recovering for many, many months. And my mom would sing to me. So she would sing to me. It was the only thing that made me feel good. It was the only thing that made me feel healed and feel something outside of that physical pain that I was constantly in, being a small child in recovery from brain surgery. After that, I realized, or during that, I should say, I realized the healing power of music. And being someone who already loved to sing as a young child, it then made me want to pursue it as not just a career path for me, but because I knew it could make people feel good. So it just so happens that at the same time, American Idol aired, the first season of American Idol. And 2001, 2002, something like that. And that was one of the few things I could do. I lived a very sheltered life. I wasn't allowed to watch Cartoon Network until I was near out of high school. That type of situation, if you can imagine. So I was able to watch American Idol. That was something that we could sit down and watch as a family. As an aspiring singer, someone who loved to make music at a young age, I saw that as a way for me to make what I wanted to do possible. And I realized that it was a legitimate and possible career path, you know, not just like, oh, there's these magical people that you hear on the radio. How'd they get there? We can just sing a song and end up on the radio. But then I was like, that's my path. So as soon as I became old enough, it was season 10 of American Idol. I want to say it was 2010. And so I started auditioning for the show. I auditioned a total of 13 times before making it this, the final time I was on as Ada Vox. And yeah, from there I started touring the world. I was a few years later towards the end of the pandemic on Queen of the Universe. I've done auditions for America's Got Talent, for The Voice, for The X Factor, for everything. I coach people for auditions. I do vocal coaching. I'm a trained instrumentalist. I went to college as a clarinet performance major. So I've put in all that hard work and everything that I could, and then pursued exposure through reality television just because it was an avenue that I discovered at a young age could get me where I wanted to get.
Yeah, and I've seen your name all over, and I saw a couple of postings about America's Got Talent. I saw that on your Instagram. Like I saw those little snippets and those little like exposure things. And I was like, oh, okay, come on. Let's drop some hints about what we're doing.
I've done a little bit of everything, been a little bit of everywhere, you know.
A little bit of everywhere. Oh goodness. Yeah. And I know like the thing is your voice is really unique. And I know you've talked about, if anybody ever followed you, I know it's always a story that comes up when you're on any of these shows, but you know, we're go ahead and repeat the story just one more time. So how, so your voice, it's like, it's really, really high and your range is beautiful. And so let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I have, I guess you'd call it a condition. I don't know. It's just the way that I'm built. but I have something called infantile epiglottis, or they refer to it as infantile epiglottis, means I have a baby epiglottis. So things that I have in here, my inner workings of my vocal cords and everything going on there is tiny. And I have a feeling that it has to do with when I had my brain surgery and the medications I was on. And that it just stopped my certain parts of my voice and whatever else from developing, you know, as they should have. Because the medication I was on caused some types of hormonal imbalances and things of that nature. And the surgery kind of messed me up, you know, in different ways. So I'm still alive, though. Yay. So
yeah, congratulations on being here.
Yeah. So I think that my vocal growth was stunted. In the sense that they just stayed the same size. Because when I found out, it was actually when I was on American Idol, and I got sick, and I had lost my voice. This was a few days before filming the finale for the show. And they took me into their throat specialist, their ear, nose, and throat specialist, and they did a throat scope on me, and that's when he gave me the rundown. He's like, wow, this is unique. You know, you actually have a special voice, like, he says you're actually built different.
You're built different.
And so I'm like, hey, I'll take that. I'm a special girl.
And you are, and your voice is beautiful. It's heavenly.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's just, I'm literally just built a little bit different. So my voice is just a little special.
Yeah, but and you also have to remember that, like, even when people have gifts or, you know, traumatic things that happen in children that give them beautiful voices, you also have to train and work hard, because it's not just being special. You also have to work hard to show people that you're special and make them believe it. And I've known a lot of the work that you've put in, and I think it's been really admirable to see it happen. Because you're from that generation, too, where drag artists, you know, we weren't really supposed to sing, right? Like, it was always like that kind of, like, it was, like, probably, like, 15 years ago, like, even, like, where it was just, like, it was, like, RuPaul had a couple of songs, you know, that was out there. Some other kind of artists kind of did some singing here and there. And then, like, I remember I was talking to Courtney Act at the Austin International Drag Festival.
That old
and
bitch.
I said,
I love her.
Yeah, I love her too. And I was like, I asked her about it, and I was like, how do you feel about that whole thing? She's like, well, where I'm from, she's like, it's fine. Like, whatever. She's like, do what you got to do. If that's your talent and you want to bring it to drag, bring it. Like, she's like,
it's kind of an American thing. That in the American drag scene. I have only been doing drag for 8 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as old as you, but you know, but still, I grew up in the Texas pageant scene, you know, becoming Ada. And it was I was very much told by a lot of people, you can't sing. That's not doing drag. Right. And they said that you're not doing true drag. You're not an actual drag artist. And I say, well, okay, that's fine with me. I'm a singer.
Yeah, I'm a singer.
I said, I'm a singer, and I've always been a singer. Putting on a dress does not make me a drag queen. I mean, I exist in the drag realm, but I am a vocalist, and that's the only thing I've ever aspired to be. And if you don't accept me as a drag queen, that is not my problem, because that is not what I aim to be.
You're like, I'm going to be a star. And actually, you are a star in your own right. And I agree with that a lot, because what happens is we got to, like, if you think about drag as a whole, it kind of had limitations in the sense of what you could do to, like, make it, right? It was like, for the longest time, you got on Drag Race and that was it, right? And then suddenly you started seeing drag artists doing, like, their own clothing line, or starting to appear on Broadway, or, you know, as, like, bit parts in movies, and like, then print models, and then RuPaul was doing, you know, print ads and stuff like that, but, like, you started seeing all of these other avenues, because after a while, there's, like, this point where you're like, well, I don't necessarily just want to be performing in bars for the rest of my life. I want to do something with this.
Yeah.
I want to grow. I want to be something with this medium that I've, you know, come to love and cultivate. And I think that there's a lot to be said about the different avenues that you can use drag as a way to bolster something that you might already have. I was always an entertainer. I was always a singer, too. And when I found drag, it just gave me the outlets that I needed. But what drag boosted more for me was, like, because I've always been an activist. So drag helped my voice get louder, because it put me in front of people. And then I would get invited to speak at large events in drag about the things that I was, like, on my causes. And so drag helped me be a better activist and a better advocate for the community.
It basically taught you how to be heard.
It taught me how to be heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was really, because I felt like before I was just shouting into the void and not being able to really get notice and recognition, and drag really helped me with that avenue to really propel me forward.
Well, and it's similar to my singing though as well, because as a boy, everyone always told me, you know, like I said, I've been doing it forever. 20 years I've been singing professionally. And I was always told that I wouldn't advance past where I was because I wasn't attractive enough. I wasn't marketable. Nobody wanted to listen to me because I had this high-pitched voice singing Aretha Franklin and Mariah Carey, but I was, you know, a chubby little Latino boy from Texas. And it just didn't make sense. But discovering drag and the art form that it is helped me to learn to be heard and to make people listen in a different way. And, you know, it's that power of drag.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's beautiful in that way. Have you ever been booked where people didn't know you sang? I just wanted to know if that ever happened.
I usually get booked as a headliner type of situation. So people show up and buy tickets to see me because they know me, usually. Right. But every now and again, when I do larger events like festivals, perhaps, people that may not know me, because I thankfully, because of my niche, I'm not just from Drag Race, a lip-syncing queen from there. Mm-hmm. I am a singing diva from a mainstream television show. So right. sometimes I will get booked for music festivals to be a music headliner.
Oh, wow.
And I will stand out from the crowd and, you know, everyone coming up with their bands and, you know, rock bands and well-known artists and mm-hmm. stuff that are on the radio and whatnot. And then you have me. And and I've had people that come up to the meet and greet after, things like that, and they will tell me, we had no idea why there was this drag queen coming up there. Like, why are they going to have mm-hmm. lip syncing and all that at a music festival? And what I loved even more is when they tell me that they didn't realize I was singing until my second or third song.
Oh, wow.
And they'll tell me, yeah. And they're like, we thought you were lip syncing the whole time until you started talking to us in the microphone during the song and doing, you know, things that were off the beaten path of the original songs when you're doing covers. They're like, you sound like a record. It's insane. Like, we can't believe you were actually singing and everything. Mm. So every now and again, I make those types of appearances, and I really do appreciate it because it allows me to be exposed to a new audience, but mm-hmm. also allows that new audience to see drag artistry in a different way.
Right.
Than right, just being nightclub, cockety cock cock, you know, whatever. You know, there's a very closed-minded view of drag still.
Right.
And I'm very glad that I can help to give people a different perspective of what that can be.
Right. And that's amazing. You performed with Patti LaBelle, right?
I did.
Yes. What was she like? I just want to know. This is a personal question for me. I just want to know, what's she like? What's she about? Does she smell good?
So, Patti and I get along tremendously. From the moment we met, she said, I knew you were one of mine. And you know what she means by that. You know, just one of her girls. And she, from what I was told, was that Patti was a really hard person for them to get. That she'd never done American Idol before. They'd been trying to get her for years. Mm-hmm. And when they presented her with the contestants, she told them she would only do the show if she got to sing with me.
Oh, wow.
So that was their win condition to get Patti LaBelle.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I was so, obviously you can imagine how honored I was by someone who has, of course, been an idol of mine since forever as a soul mm-hmm. singing diva.
Yes.
And she was everything that you think she is. She's, yay. You know, she's that cool shit talking auntie that ain't got time for nobody, but she mm-hmm. has time for all the mess. She sure does. When I tell you, we had a whole kiki right there when we were waiting for rehearsals and everything. We were just sitting there. It was me, Patti, Yolanda Adams, backstage there, just hanging out and talking shit. and it was the tales about Aretha and the divas that she didn't get along with.
To be a fly in the wall in that room.
We were just having fun. She was talking shit about all the other contestants. I know she doesn't even care that I say this. But we were back there and she says, these people beat you on the show? This is so boring. She says, they have no flavor, honey. she says, I don't know what's wrong with people these days. I don't know how they beat you. And I was like, I agree. But, you know, what can you do?
I agree.
But she's absolutely fabulous. She's the mess talking auntie that has mm-hmm. no time for anybody but you. Mm-hmm. And she's absolutely wonderful.
That's beautiful.
She don't know none of her words by memory anymore. But, you know, that's a whole nother thing.
She doesn't have to, you know, no, she doesn't have to.
Teleprompters.
That's fine. You don't have to. So let's talk about Queen of the Universe. Yes. Since this is a drag related podcast and, you know, the thing is, I'm going to talk like, you know, as a person who saw that come into being, right. I want to talk about it in the sense of like, I thought that that was a really cool idea because mm-hmm. I really do. I thought that that was such an amazing idea because like I talked about, you know, like when I talked about drag and like live singing just wasn't a thing that really existed with it in that realm. It was cool that it was finally hitting mainstream in that way to really showcase the people who use that as their platform, like we talked about earlier. And the second that I heard about it, I knew you were going to be on it without even talking to you. I was like, Ada's probably going to do this. and that's why I was rooting for you the entire season. All of the songs that you sang were amazing. So good. Beautiful. And it was great. So let's talk about your time on the show. Let's talk about a little bit about the audition process. People always love to hear about that. And then let's talk about your very first performance and nerves and like what your impression of the show was.
Yeah. So the audition process, was pretty easy.
Great.
to be entirely honest. I honestly think, and this is not me being self-centered or crazy, I think I was already a catalyst for the idea of the show being put into fruition.
Mm.
I don't think they had never seen a queen here in America, at least on mm-hmm. a mainstream television show like American Idol competing head to head with vocalists.
Right, right.
And I think that that was a catalyst for what came to end up being Queen of the Universe.
Right.
And I also know some things that I won't say, but I'm just going to say, I think I was a shoo-in to be on the season regardless. We'll talk after.
Yes. Ooh, I can't wait for this weekend. No.
But no, as soon as I heard about the show, I said, this show is for me. This is what I do. Because when it was brought up to me and I found it and read into what it wasn't for drag queens who, you know, sing part-time for fun. It was for vocalists mm-hmm. who happen to present as drag artists.
Yes.
And yes. And that's the big difference between something like the talent that can be showcased on RuPaul's Drag Race and the talent that can be showcased on something like Queen of the Universe. It's a different level of a specific skill.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was everything I wanted it to be. The audition process was, like I said, it wasn't difficult. They didn't ask mm-hmm. for much. You do, you know, you do the Zoom interviews, you submit your mm-hmm. application. The only difference between, like, say, Queen of the Universe and a regular Drag Race audition for girls that may have auditioned, I'm sure thousands of people already know. But mm-hmm. Instead of just submitting a picture of you as a boy and a picture of you in drag, you submit a picture of you as a boy, picture of you in drag, and a short clip of you singing a cappella. Mm. And that's the very first round of audition. And then wow. you go on to interview on a Zoom call where they do like the personality test. They figure out how you're going to be in confessionals, you know, ask you questions, mm-hmm. have you do another live singing audition to close out that interview on camera right. as a boy or however you present during confessionals, I think. Oh, maybe.
Yeah.
And then you had to film some looks and I filmed them all. It was during COVID that the casting right. was happening, like in the height of COVID. So I filmed them all in my grandma's driveway, you know, strutting up and down that driveway right in the middle of the mm-hmm. neighborhood. And, right. Cars were passing by rooting me on saying, you mm-hmm. look beautiful. I'm very happy to be from a family who is well loved in the community that we grew up in. We may not be rich, but the Sanders mm-hmm. family, everybody loves my grandparents. They are angels.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, they're the old people of the street who everyone just knows and loves. And I'm very blessed to have been part of that. And I was able to record walking up and down my grandma's driveway. In my audition video, my grandma's in some of the clips just because she wanted to be out there. Adam Michael, I want to watch.
Oh, my God. So,
in my audition video, she's there sitting in her walker at the ramp mm-hmm. in front of her house. And I'm just walking down next to her, modeling my gowns and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you get all that stuff in and then you wait. And then there's this whole, it was filmed in London. So it was, we're going to get your visa, make sure your passport's ready, make sure blah, 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 blah. which was an issue because my passport had been recently lost when we moved back to Texas during the pandemic. Oh, wow. It had been lost. So I was like, oh no. and then the first time it was supposed to come, it was delayed or something. And then it got delayed further. Then it got delayed further. And then I was supposed to fly out for filming and I still didn't have my passport. Mm-hmm. And then they said, wait a second now. We are not going to do this without you. Mm-hmm. And they had me contact the legal team and all kinds of stuff. Wow. And they had it rushed and we had other applications and they were dealing with the passport team and whatever else the heck they could, I guess, behind the scenes. And my flight was changed, I think, 3 or 4 times.
Oh, wow.
Because we were waiting for that passport before the absolute, like, they had to start filming on this day and they could not wait any longer.
Oh, wow.
I got my passport the night before the final flight was scheduled for departure.
Oh, wow.
So literally at like 7 p.m. that UPS came by, dropped off my passport, and I flew out immediately that next morning on the last possible scheduled flight they could have done.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I was literally less than 12 hours away from not having been able to be part of the show at all.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is crazy. That is literally insane. But I feel like those moments is what makes it more impactful and makes you work harder.
Yeah. And then I, you know, got on the show and lost.
I think I saw you in a bunch of episodes. So
as long as I was seen, honey, I ain't mad at it.
Yeah. When we talk about exposure gigs and drag, I think that's okay for an exposure gig in that capacity. Because you did well.
You know, just a little bit of exposure. We'll take it. We'll take it.
So tell me about the first episode that you were on.
Well, I sang a song and I did lovely. I sang At Last by Etta James. It's been one of my standards forever. Mm-hmm. Like I said earlier, I started singing at things like quinceañeras and weddings and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of father-daughter dances. I did a lot of first wedding songs and dances and, you know, things of that nature. So At Last is something that I've been singing forever, with Etta James being one of my favorite vocalists of all time. Mm-hmm. So for the This Is Me theme, that just felt like an accurate way for me to present myself as an artist. I wasn't here to say, this is my drag, I'm fabulous, I'm going to win, I'm going to this, I'm going to that. I just wanted to say, no, this is what I sing, this is how I sing, listen.
Yeah. And I think that read, beautifully. It did. I think that you presented so well on the show.
Your Texas
drag came off just beautifully. And obviously, you did well in that first episode, but it was a really great moment. I think it felt really full circle in a lot of different ways, especially because of that song. That song is one of my favorites, and I just think that. And you're just so talented, anyway. And like,
thank you.
I was like, oh, let's just listen to what we're saying, everybody. Oh gosh. So switching gears just a little bit. Because I'm promoting you this way. So most people.
Yes.
So you got runner up on the show, because apparently anything drag related is called runner up. It's called, never second, just runner up.
That was a lovely first alternate.
Lovely first alternate. Let's talk about that moment. I know it sounds sad, but let's talk about that moment. Did they film both of you winning?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And we legitimately had no idea which way it would go.
Really? That's cool.
Well, because you think about it, it's not like we are both entirely different types of performers.
Right. Very much so.
Which is a big reason I liked our top three, because all three of us represented something different in the realm of drag and entertainment. We were all different aspects at different levels. And this is what we say, like, Aria was like the drag queen. Like, she was drag perfection, head to toe, all the time. That was her thing. Mm-hmm. Greg was the performer. She was the entertainer who did mm-hmm. the choreography and was fun and, you know, had mm-hmm. the audience always like, feeling good. She was the performer, the stage girl. Mm-hmm. And I was the voice of the competition. I was the vocalist. Mm-hmm. So we had all aspects, I think, of what the competition stood for, all standing up there on that finale stage. And it ended up coming down to the performer and the vocalist. And mm-hmm. it came down to what they ended up saying was better drag. Mm-hmm. You know, it is what it is. They want big. They want snatched back. They want all this. I'm like, honey, I'm just here to sing.
You're like, I'm just here to sing. But you provide all of that. Like, the thing, I know what you're saying. And I get it. And I'm not, like, obviously the show's said and done. But that's the thing. That's what you, I know everybody says that when they have these interviews, but I really thought that you were going to win because your performances were really polished. Your drag was really great. Like, you had really wonderful, powerful moments on the show. I thought that you were a shoo-in. And I know sometimes when you're a shoo-in, like, because American Idol tends to do that as well. Like, when somebody's just doing too well, sometimes they'll just, like, goop the kids for ratings, and I get that. And I'm actually just, you know, as much as this sounds really insulting, I think that they just wanted to goop for ratings. This person's really talented and amazing, and, like, we'll put them second or whatever because they're already going to have a fabulous career, so we can goop the kids, and hopefully they come back for season two, right? You know?
Yeah, you know, I will never say I think I deserve to win over her. Because, like I said, we were opposites of what we offered to the show. Right. In my perspective as a contestant, that's how I viewed it. I said, we're offering separate packages. So it could go either way. And you know what's funny? And I don't know if I've said this in an interview. Greg and I have been friends since before we were on Queen of the Universe.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we met through TikTok many years before. Uh-huh. At least 2 or 3 years before doing Queen of the Universe, we had been friends. And there's even a video on TikTok, actually, of us singing together. We duetted each other's videos. And
oh, wow.
So from way back at some point during the very early pandemic. And we had talked about it, oddly enough. Mm-hmm. And said, it would be so crazy if there was a singing drag competition. Mm-hmm. And we had said, if there ever was, we need to be on it. And then we heard about Queen of the Universe. We mm-hmm. immediately messaged each other and were like, are you trying? Are you going to do it? you know, immediately it was like, hey, girl, you saw that.
Dang.
And we said, let's go ahead and do it. And I bet you anything that if we make it, we're going to be in the top two. Mm. We said that before we even knew what this show actually was or anything. We had just kind of heard of it. And, like, you know, the murmurs were going, talking about what it was. And some articles mm-hmm. were coming out where they were like, singing drag competition? What is this? Right. And we had said way back then, we're going to be the top two. Mm. And I told her back then that she was going to win.
So now you can just see the future. It's fine.
You know,
another skill.
You know,
the Raven stuff. Oh, I love it. That's amazing. That's cool insider tea. I love that. I love that so much. So let's get to you talking to the listeners of this podcast. What would you say as advice to people who want to break into the entertainment and just don't know if they're ever going to be good enough?
That's a hard question, only because it's not something that you can give as blanket advice. Yeah. Some people need to hear that they are not cut out for the industry. Mm-hmm. And other people need to hear that their time just hasn't come yet and they need to keep working.
Oh, that's fair.
There's two different sides of the coin. I coach for, I do vocal coaching mm-hmm. and I help people in auditions and prepare for performances and things like that for shows like American Idol and America's Got Talent and The Voice and all of this. So as you can imagine, I have people of all different backgrounds and all different levels coming through me. Mm-hmm. And I am not a vocal coach that will say, that will take any student. I don't do that. I audition people. I do an assessment beforehand.
Oh, okay.
And because I am not here to give false hope to someone.
Right.
And that's something that I've always been a really firm believer in. You, mm-hmm. And I think this is something you know, probably from your own experience with others. Mm-hmm. Some people just can't sing.
Yeah.
So, some people want to do something so badly, but they just, that's not it for them. And right. sometimes it can be tough having to be the person that mm-hmm. helps them stop wasting their time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard for them sometimes to understand that you are just trying to help them genuinely rather than just being another person who's an obstacle in their way and they have to overcome it.
Right.
You know?
Right. And they're that's a beautiful moment, actually. And mm-hmm. because for the things that I know how to do, like I know how to entertain, I know how to produce, I'm good at business. And like I'm breaking, and actually I'll talk to you something I'm breaking into. I'm breaking into stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. I've had some successes, I've had some bombs, and all are great learning experiences. And I keep pushing at it. And nobody's actually come up to me and said, like, I'm not going to be good enough at it. But it is something that doesn't come naturally to me. And so mm-hmm. I have to consistently work at it. Because the one thing that all the comics in my city talk about is they're like, oh, your stage presence is insane. Like, yeah. you get up there and you command rooms. And it's really amazing to see because a lot of us struggle with that aspect, right? Mm-hmm. Getting up there and being able to just immediately pull that attention towards
us. And presence is something you either got or you don't.
Right.
That's unfortunately not something that can be taught.
Right.
You can teach someone to be confident all day long and they can maybe eventually muster that up, but that does not mean anyone's going to want to pay attention.
Yeah.
That's just the truth. And, if I had to nail it down to a word of advice, it's to mm-hmm. find someone who is not just going to be honest with you in their own way, but find someone who is qualified to be honest with you. You can't just go ask anyone about right. what your potential is like, or can I be a superstar? Can mm-hmm. I sing? My neighbor right. says I sing nice. You cannot trust people like that. ask people who are in the industry professionally who will be honest with you, who can right. be honest with you. Because people also have a hard time putting forth that honesty because they know it's going to hurt their feelings. They know right. it might crush somebody's dream. Right. But sometimes that honesty is what somebody needs to hear, to know that they shouldn't waste their life pursuing something that is not meant for them.
Right. And I know that there's always that line of people saying, be like, who are you to say this? And it's like, I know that, like, I've been in those spaces. I've actually mm-hmm. had that space in my head. I've been in these competition shows. Mm-hmm. I practiced this in school. I learned this. I've seen the industry. I've talked to experts. It's like, it just wasn't because I believed I could. It was because I pursued it and I got reputable feedback and criticism mm-hmm. from people who have done it professionally and in those fields. And I think that there's a lot to say about that because people don't want to hurt people's feelings.
I do. Like,
but I think that's actually probably the most honest, sincere advice
yes.
that I think that you probably could have given. Because it doesn't just say like, oh, everybody, you're going to make it, I promise. Just work hard.
Yeah. And I always preface that advice, though. And people know before we ever start a lesson, before I look at any of their videos, before anything mm-hmm. happens, I said, do you actually want to work with me? Here's what to expect. I will be honest. Mm-hmm. I will be blunt. And I am just here to protect your best interest and longevity mm-hmm. and whatever it is that you're wanting to pursue. And whether or not my professional opinion believes it is worth your time. And yeah. I will push the hell out of people that may be underdeveloped, but have the potential. And mm-hmm. I will immediately tell someone who's like, I've been singing for 25 years. And my mom says I have the best voice I've ever heard. And I really kill it at karaoke. And then they're like, I just need my break. I'm going to audition for American Idol, you know, whatever. And I say, okay. Do you want real advice? If you're okay with real advice, send me a video of you singing, send me your best, and I will give you real advice. Mm-hmm. And from there, it is what it is. Some people are really, really angry about it. And I say, sorry about it.
Right.
You know, you said you wanted real advice. I'm not here to kiss your ass.
Yeah. Well, and it's also honest because you're not, it's basically also saying like, you're not going to steal people's money.
Exactly. I tell people that same thing because I reject them for voice lessons because, like I said, my coaching is geared towards audition prep for shows like American Idol, America's Got Talent, mm-hmm. and The Voice. I will not take someone's $100 voice coaching fee if there is nothing to coach.
Right. Right.
So sometimes it's not worth the money or time, and I'm saving both of us the time and the money.
Yeah, and the hardship and the heartbreak. Ooh, child. Mm-hmm. I get it. Two final questions for you. So let's talk about the future real quick. What does the future hold for Ada Vox?
Well, I am going to be putting out some new music soon.
Yay!
Here's the thing with me. It is hard as an independent artist who is... I have approached every single like LGBTQ record label out there, especially like World of Wonder Records, Peg mm-hmm. Records, the PEG Management and Records, and all those other places that produce and put out music for all these girls, and they're submitting for Grammy nominations and all this stuff year after year. They don't want to work with me. And it's just, I'm not a Drag Race girl. I'm not a Drag Race girl, and I'm not some super old school Drag Race legend. It's one way or the other. It's the way it seems. And I have talked to labels and other things before, and it's always you're too queer specific for mainstream music. And I'm like, okay, but like Sam Smith, Kim Petras, and those other people.
Lil
like,
Nas X. Breaking down all the walls and barriers.
Yeah. And then the queer people that I've talked to say, well, you're not queer enough. Because what I want to do is make real music, not gay music. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes, I will. I know what that is. And I'm going to stop right here before we get to the next point. I also feel that way about queer music. Like, you can never, this is my litmus test a little bit. I always say, if I can't find their song on a karaoke track, if I can't go to Carafun and find the song, I was like, it's too niche. I was like, it doesn't merge into mainstream. Uh-huh. And a lot of these girls, and some of these girls do have obviously fantastic and amazing voices. Let me be more gender inclusive. Like, all these people have really wonderful and amazing voices, and they're not getting to that level necessarily. And I think that the thing is, like, it's okay to obviously have a song about douching. Like, that's great.
Uh-huh.
It's wonderful. That's so fun. But also, it'd be super cool to have a queer equivalent of, like, At Last, or like Born This Way in that way.
And that's exactly the thing I want to do. I want to make the At Last. I want to make the I Will Always Love You. I want to make the hard-hitting classic. I want to sing a James Bond theme song. You know, those are the types of things that I want to do and be known for. I want to be the Dolly Parton who writes and sings I Will Always Love You and just sits at home making money the rest of my life because I made, one of the world's biggest songs.
Right.
And just kind of pop up whenever I want to start an amusement park.
I see the trajectory. I see it.
But I have goals that aren't just what people may see for queer artists. Mm-hmm. Who are as LGBTQ niche presenting as I may be. And at the same time, I was always told out of drag that I was never attractive enough to make it in mainstream, and that I wasn't flashy enough to make it as a queer artist, as a boy. So I stay walking the line as both Adam and Ada as not good enough for either side. More than talented enough, but everything else doesn't line up for everyone.
Right. And then, or having to sell aggressive sex so much so. And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. But because that's the thing too. I've always been, as a singer, I've always been overweight. I've been Black. And there's always that journey too, as being a person of color, as we know. We both know.
Yes.
And and like trying to break into spaces. I've always seen so much more celebration of my singing in drag than I ever did out. The thing is, I'm also very much, I like camp music because I was on Camp Wanakiki, and like, I love camp. And so like, I love changing the words to songs, like kind of Weird Al style and like making it fun. But I Sherry also Vine
realness.
I also like a good, I'm a person who my favorite and best compliments I get from my singing, because I do ballads like all the time, is when somebody comes up to me and says, in the middle of a drag show, because I love killing a vibe, they'll be like, your song just made me cry. And I'm like, that's the compliment that I want more so than anything. And it's not about douching necessarily, you know, like that's what I want. I want to make people feel things and smile and think about their loved ones or their family member that passed or being accepted in their own skin. And I love that music, and that music makes me cry. And I want to make that music for other people or perform that music for other people. And so I totally get where you're coming from. And I also see the dichotomy in the conversation you're talking about. Because even though I see you as this Texas personality with this big drag, and like, and you have the voice and you have the personality and you have the stardom and the presence and everything. But I get it, because the last person that got so big, or the last few people that got so big, really leaned into the sexual gay aspect of gayness. And that's fine, and that's wonderful, and it should be celebrated. But it also, it makes it difficult for the people who want to make an Adele album.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that. And I think, I know that you're going to make it, and the world's waking up to it. So maybe we had to go that route first, and then now they're going to start looking at the rest of us and being like, hey, also, I want to, can you give me a good song about, you know, like wanting to get up in the morning? Like, you know,
yeah, yeah. Hey, you know, I've met people recently who are potentially life-changing connections for what I want to do. And yeah, they heard me sing for the first time and were jaw-dropped in awe. Not to toot my own horn, but these people want to work with me because of my talent. And I'm proud of the work that I've put into that, and that I can get that type of reaction from true industry professionals who have written for the most iconic artists of all times and gotten number one hits in the most iconic music eras, you know, ever. And the fact that they want to work with me and admire what I do is the validation I need to know that I'm on the right path and that I just need to keep doing what I'm doing. Because eventually the right connection and the right break will make its way to the stage for me.
Oh, I absolutely believe that that's true. I absolutely believe that's true. So actually, this is my second to last question, because we didn't talk about this enough, but so it'll just be really easy. Who is your favorite judge in American Idol?
Ooh, so I was on twice. And first time I was on as a boy, I had Mariah Carey, Nicki Minaj, Randy Jackson, and Keith Urban. Second time I was on, of course, it was the current judging panel of Katy Perry, Luke Bryan, and Lionel Richie. And I felt a lot more closely related to the current panel of judges. They seemed to genuinely care, whereas on season 12, it was more about Nicki and Mariah having their storyline of everything that was going on between them.
Other people were there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We were just back on music, you know. But I guess I'd have to say that it's oh gosh, I love them all because they all respected me for who I was and what I did. And they all saw me as a singer and an artist and not just some token drag artist on the show for ratings.
Beautiful.
I don't know if I can pick one or the other, because I don't want to make anybody mad, but two, we don't get time with them. Outside of what you see on TV, they're behind the table. We are on the stage. Right. And we have maybe 1 or 2 minutes with them. That was also on TV when we find out that we make it to the top something or other, top 50 or something. And they just come into the room and say, hello, group of this people in the room. You have made it to the next round. Woo, woo, woo. And then they go around, give everybody hugs, and then they walk away. But, you know, for TV purposes, they have to keep separation, can't allow things like favoritism and relationships to bond and whatever. And then, I love all of them. I love all of them dearly, and for good reason. They all treated me like a person.
Oh, gosh, that's such tea in the queer world. So my last question that I asked you to prepare for is that in your local scene, your local drag scene, if you were to get into a bar fight, you can choose up to three people. Who would you want to help you win the bar fight, and why?
Up to three people. Okay. I know one for sure. One is definitely my husband. I don't know if you know who my husband is. My husband's name is Alizé Brooks. He's a drag performer as well. I choose that bitch right away because that bitch crazy. And
that butt rich is crazy.
and you know what? One thing people know not to mess with is crazy. So,
yep.
That's one. And gosh, let's see. Does it have to be a drag queen, or can it be? What if it's like a manager of a bar?
Yeah, that works. That works.
So, Blue, Miss Blue, the manager of Friezo Nightclub. she ain't never done no wrong by me, and I know she show up for me. And her thing is she's a bad bitch. She's a kind bitch, and her excuse for never wanting to do anything is that I'm a mama. I got kids. So, and if you know anything about a mama who got kids, who has to be a bar manager at a gay bar, she could put up with some shit. And I know she could fight. So, I got husband crazy, bar manager Blue. And now I want to pick one more just so I have a well-rounded team.
Like the Avengers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I'm trying to think of some big bitches. That's what I'm trying to think of. There's a lot of skinny little hoes. They ain't going to do nothing for me. You know?
That's great.
This other bitch, I don't think she could fight. I don't think she could fight at all, but she'd be entertaining to watch get her booty whooped. She'd be doing her best. She would do her best. But I just don't think she could fight. So I gotta say, Brianna Douglas, she is Las Vegas's Beyonce impersonator. One of Las Vegas Beyonce impersonators. Love her. But I think she's the kind of, don't touch me. Don't pull my hair. Don't do it. She's the one that show up bald headed mess. And I love her. I love her dearly. I just would be entertaining to see her interact in the brawl.
I love that. That's amazing. Okay. So, no, I love your choices. So, the one thing I didn't ask you, though, have you ever thought about, like if Shucked goes on tour, potentially going out for that role that Alex Newell plays?
So. I actually was intending on getting in to try and get an audition for the Broadway play. Think of any other drag artist. Who can pull that off? Just me and Alex.
It's just you and Alex, actually. Literally.
Like, that range, the range and the style and everything, that's a real singing role. It's not a BFA type of girls situation. This is for a true singer. And I really thought that was something that I could go with. My goal is to be an EGOT. Of course that includes having to get that Tony. So
yeah.
And I said, hey, Alex won one with this one. I can sing this song. Let's do it.
sing this song.
But then, you know, they said, just kidding. No more corn jokes on Broadway. So who knows about the tour? I don't know. It doesn't pay as well as Broadway does. And you have to do a lot more work moving around and all kinds of stuff constantly. Yeah, it's true. But I just don't know if that's for me. If I do Broadway, I'd like to do it on Broadway in one place.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
But it's definitely something I considered.
Yeah.
It is something definitely. I considered. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So now that we are at the end of our podcast or end of our interview. So we're at the end of our interview. I'm really excited that we get to hang out this weekend here in Portland, Oregon. Because I always say Portland and sometimes people get confused. Here in Portland, Oregon this weekend for The Moment, happening on Sunday at Misfits Bar and Lounge. Can you give the kids all of your social media, Ada?
AdaVox. It's all at AdaVox, honey. It's just TikTok AdaVox, Twitter X, whatever the heck it's called these days, AdaVox. Instagram is really the one that's going to be easiest to find me and catch me. AdaVox on Facebook. You just search AdaVox. Everything got a blue check mark. Except X, because I ain't paying for that verification. No, ma'am. I had got it fair and square many, many years ago. And then they go, take it away and make a hoe pay for that. Nope, I ain't paying for it.
You're like, I don't even care if it's $14.99 a month. Screw yourself.
I don't care if it's 99 cents a month. I was official. And they try to gook me. It's just at AdaBox anywhere and everywhere. It's fabulous. I'm easy to find. I'm not good at social media. But I'm there.
But I'm there.
Oh, you can also catch me at AdaBox on Venmo, Cash App, and PayPal. Thank you.
Oh, perfect. I never get those in time. So, yes. So, everybody, please make sure to come out, because I know I have a lot of listeners in Portland. Come out to meet this beautiful vocalist here at Misfits Bar and Lounge. Make sure to follow them all on the socials, because this episode's coming out the Thursday before the show. I'm super excited to hang out with Ada, and I'm just super, super, super overwhelmed by how amazing the response has been to this show. So, yeah, I think we're going to leave it there. Say bye to the kids, Ada.
Bye to the kids, Ada!
Bye, kids.
Oh. Hi, everybody. This has been another episode of A Gem of a Secret Podcast. The host of A Gem of a Secret Podcast is Coco Gem Holiday. Our music was provided by Touche Douche and Party Favors. You can follow them on Instagram at Touche Likes Beef and Party Favors Music. Please follow us online at www.agemofasecretpodcast.com. That is a J-E-M of a secret podcast.com, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Our episodes are released every Thursday. Bye-bye.